Committee on Budget for Tuesday, June 21st, 2005. Open a work session on SB 5617. Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate Bill 5617 is the bill that you are using as the vehicle for the budget of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. In this budget, you provide state support to Oregon 17 community colleges and also provide support to the central department office that has oversight responsibilities over the community college system. The budget also includes expenditures of federal funds for workforce programs, and it includes the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps program. I've distributed two materials to you today. One is a memo with today's date, titled The LFO Recommendation, Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, Senate Bill 5617. And the other item is a copy of our standard Orbitz report that is dated June 17th. I did give a copy of draft materials to you on Friday. I don't know if you've been able to look at those, but if you have, please note that there are no changes from the draft memo to the one that is being distributed to you today, except for the change in the date. So there are no other changes in the memo. Mr. Chair, if you'd like, I can run through these recommendations, which are all recommendations for changes to the governor's recommended budget as was printed and submitted to you at the beginning of the session.
Mr. Bender, the intent is to go through all recommendations through recommendation 8, and then I will take a motion on the first 8 recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And take any questions during your presentation, actually, from members also.
Yes, sir. I wonder if I could request that as Mr. Bender goes through this exercise, that where appropriate, he could give us also the House budget numbers at the same time. Thank you.
I don't know if he, to be fair to Mr. Bender, I don't know if he can give you, he's probably good enough that he can give you the exact number. But I would not want to hold him to being
give
or
take a few cents.
Please proceed.
There are actually, in terms of these recommendations, there are a few differences, so I will point those out. But in most cases, there will be no difference. And if I don't mention a particular difference, the House budget is identical to, or the House did approve the recommendation as you see it before you hear. One thing I did fail to mention in my little introduction there was that, as you know, there are capital construction projects that are under consideration for community colleges this session. If you approve those, this would be the first time that the state's provided support in the form of state bonds for community college capital construction projects in quite some time, about 30 years or so. But those decisions are not included in Senate Bill 5617. This bill is the operating budget bill only. Constitutionally, we do need another bill to handle community college capital construction issues. So this budget, all of these recommendations will relate entirely to the operating budget. The first recommendation, though, which is labeled number one, does, despite what I just said, have a deal with community college with capital construction, so it needs a little explanation. There is a package in the governor's recommended budget, which is numbered package 102, which is the capital construction policy package that adds support for capital construction projects at 6 community colleges. Although we are not dealing with that, there's also a component of package 102 that is in the operating budget, which is a part of Senate Bill 5617. And this recommendation deals with the component that is a part of the operating budget. And that is that the governor's recommended budget includes $100,000 in other funds for the department to spend on costs relating to the oversight of the capital construction program on the community college campuses. The sources of these funds are not specifically identified, although they would come from community colleges themselves or either out of their operating expenditures or out of the proceeds of the bonds that the state would issue. We are actually recommending that you reduce this other fund's expenditure limitation by $99,999 pending the determination of what the administrative and oversight costs may be. That is to say, this would leave a $1 expenditure limitation, and as we get more information about those costs, either during the session or, if that's not available, even during the interim, the emergency board would have authority to increase this expenditure limitation to the amount that represents the actual oversight costs. $100,000 in the governor's budget was a placeholder. It was not based on a specific analysis of what those costs would be.
You might state, Mr. Bender, that the governor, while he put a $100,000 placeholder here, he put a number in a number of budgets, $1 placeholders also.
Correct. For the actual projects themselves, the placeholders were essentially, well, $2 because there were two funding sources. But, yeah, so this would have a similar type of placeholder for the administrative costs of the program. So that's our first recommendation. Our second recommendation to you is there is a policy package in the governor's budget, which is labeled Package 103, which is the community colleges portion of something that you've seen in two other budgets already, which is the development of an integrated pre-K to 16 student data system that would facilitate the transfer of student data between, in this case, high schools, community colleges, and OUS institutions. So it would basically be an expanded form of transcript data that could be, that the transfer of this would be facilitated if the system were approved. The governor's budget includes $743,400 in general fund for the community colleges portion of this budget, of this program data system. What we are recommending is the following. First, we recommend that the total general fund support to community colleges for the development of this data system be reduced by $209,000 to leave $664,400 remaining. The reduction would eliminate general fund support for some expenses and require them to be paid by the community colleges instead of by the state general fund. And what these expenses would be the amount that was budgeted for computer hardware and software that would reside at and be owned by the colleges, and the amount that the colleges are planning to, or budgeting to spend to train their own personnel on this new system. This is comparable to what you did with the OUS portion of the budget for the same package. And in order, furthermore, for comparability, we recommend that you do not appropriate this remaining $664,400 to the department, but instead you appropriate it to the emergency board as a special purpose appropriation, which they may then request from the emergency board for allocation after they make a report on the design, architecture, and total cost to complete the system, on its timeline to completion and implementation, and to the expected outcomes of the system implementation. These, in order to clarify the requirements for the department to request these funds from the emergency board, we do recommend that you approve the budget note in recommendation 2 on page 2 of the memo. This language is identical to the budget note language that you put into the Department of Higher Education budget last week, except it changes the reference to which department we're talking about. If there are no questions, I'd like to go on to the next package, which is an operations staffing package. The governor's recommended budget included approximately $86,000 in other funds and approximately $361,000 in federal funds expenditure limitation to support 3 new full-time positions and to support the cost of the department's participation in the statewide PRISM data system. We are recommending that you approve this package with certain modifications. One of them is to reduce the limitations to reflect the change in the PERS contribution rate, which you've been making adjustments for in every budget. And in this particular package, there is funding for PERS contribution costs. So part of the adjustment is for that purpose. We also recommend that you eliminate the federal fund support added for the Executive Support Specialist 2 position and finance the position from federal funds budgeted for professional services in the governor's recommended budget. So essentially we're recommending that you require them to use existing authority that they have in their base budget to finance this individual's compensation, because this particular individual was paid in the past out of the department's professional services budget. We also have a technical correction to correctly account for the PRISM payment, and we do recommend this package with those modifications, which if you want more detail, I can go into them. They are identified here more distinctly in more detail in the Board's report. Recommendation 4 is the LFO Analyst Adjustment Package 801, and this includes the AG rate adjustment downward from $119, though it was budgeted at $119 per hour, and the actual AG charge for attorneys will be $111 per hour. So we recommend a reduction in both general and federal fund support. And we recommend that when the reduction in the federal funds that are saved from the reduction in the AG cost, they're only $621, but still, we recommend that you transfer that to local service providers, that are the workforce service providers who are providing services throughout the state. So the fund savings could then be transferred to provide additional services. The second adjustment reduces the PERS amount budgeted. This involves also a larger reduction of $61.25 in general fund. It also involves reductions in other funds and federal funds. We recommend that you approve that and, again, transfer the federal fund savings to local workforce service providers. Recommendation number 5 is Package 108. It is the Ways and Means Adjustment Package, and it contains 3 recommendations. First, to revise the federal funds expenditure limitation to conform with changes in federal funds revenue projections. There is some good news in that revenue projections from the federal government are expected to be higher than was the case when the governor submitted his budget. So we're recommending that you increase the federal funds expenditure limitation to account for that increase, which totals over $2.5 million. So this is just the fact that federal revenues will be higher than anticipated.
Mr. Bender, you said that was package 108. That's package 802.
I'm sorry, it is package 802.
Okay.
You're right.
I just wanted to correct it for the record.
Thank you.
Okay.
There's also a correction to show that this department's payment of its contribution to allow for the department to make its contribution to the general fund match that's required for Carl Perkins federal funds. The Carl Perkins funds support the development of professional and technical programs in both high schools and community colleges. And the funds are split between the Department of Education, which administers the portion that deals with the high school curricula, and the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, which administers the portion dealing with community college curricula. And this is basically a correction to allow the community college portion to be funded at the level that's required. And finally, we recommend adjusting for 8 positions, fund shifts to reflect their current work activities between federally funded programs and general funded programs. As you can see in the table there, that results in a net shift, reduction of $52,000 approximately in general fund shifted to federal funds. Recommendation 6 is to make an adjustment based on the fact that property tax revenues of community colleges are now projected to be higher than they were when the governor submitted his recommended budget to you in December. The forecast for community college operating property tax collections is increased by $991,775. The way that the state budgets its support to community colleges is it looks at the combination of general fund that the state provides and these property taxes that community colleges provide, and then looks at this combined revenue source and determines to what extent additional funds are needed by the state to meet essential budget level changes to costs. The effect is that there is a dollar-for-dollar offset between general fund appropriations and community college property tax collections in order to meet any given level of cost. So we recommend that you reduce the general fund appropriation to the community college support fund by $991,775, noting that the offsetting increase in property tax collections leaves the institutions with the same total funding as was in the governor's budget if you make this adjustment. I do want to note to you, however, that the Senate committee chair's budget plan does not require you to make this reduction. We recommend it as part of the budgeting process for community colleges, but as you know, the Senate plan does have significant increases in community college support above the level that was in the governor's budget, and this particular recommendation is not required to conform to the Senate budget plan.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Would you like a motion now or later regarding removing this recommendation?
Actually, I have changed my mind a little bit. I was going to do it all at once, and this is in no regard. Well, let me back up a second here. I respect the recommendations of LFO. My original intent was to go all the way through 8 and then take 1, but I realized that would put some of my members in my committee in the position of voting. Well, I will talk to those members to explain this more fully. If we took it all, the recommendation in the end will probably include not to do 6, but there may be members in my committee that do not want to split this overall package that would be voting no, and I would not want that to be interpreted that somehow they supported the fix. So I think to be fair to all members of the committee, make the motion on 6, on recommendation 6 at this time.
Right. Mr. Chair, I move that the LFO recommendation number 6 related to revenue adjustment, property taxes, be omitted from this report.
And move that recommendation not be approved and be omitted. Is there any objection to that motion? Hearing no objection, that motion passes. Now we'll go on to the next slide.
There was a request to indicate whether there are any changes from the House version, and I just wanted to clarify, since this is a bit unusual, that that's not a difference from the House version. The House also voted to omit that particular recommendation. So the House did approve putting on the record that this vote did not represent a change in how the state calculates it's support for community colleges, but just a one-time effort to increase the support at this particular time for community colleges.
I would think, unless there's an objection, I would concur with that from the standpoint that we do look at overall resources in determining need, and still keeping that to be our normal process would probably be best. I think the intent of both this subcommittee in the Senate and the intent of the subcommittee in the House is to try to give community colleges as much support as we possibly can. And so that's why both of us are rejecting this recommendation at this time. Recommendation 7.
Recommendation 7 is a recommendation to enhance general fund support to the department and to community colleges. And the recommendation that is consistent with the Senate budget plan is to increase total general fund in what we're calling Package 811 by $35.9 million above the governor's recommended budget. The budget also includes, this is for increase to the community college support fund. There was a question of how the differences from the House budget. The House budget item that's comparable to this action is an increase of $45.9 million. So this increase is $10 million less than the House budget plan at this point. It's $35.9 million more than what the governor recommended when he submitted his budget in December. The Senate budget plan also includes funding for certain activities that are not in the Senate, in the House plan at all. And that is, it includes $500,000 in general fund to support the Portland Community College Skill Center and $500,000 in general fund for the Sabin Schellenberg Skill Center of the North Clackamas School District number 12. Both of these skill center programs had been financed in the community college through the community college budget in the past, and funding was eliminated for both items during the special sessions and during the last legislative session when the state experienced budget shortfalls. The Senate plan allows restorations to the Portland Community College Skill Center and the Sabin Skill Center. I'll be happy to answer any questions if there are.
I have questions.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question would be, you indicated, Mr. Bender, this is not in the House budget plan. So where does their $1 million go?
They have a total $45.9 million increase that all goes to the Community College Support Fund. In the Senate plan, there's a total $36.9 million increase, of which $35.9 goes to the Community College Support Fund, and the other million is split between these two programs.
Okay. So we're just taking a little bit out and putting it in a special place for these two programs. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
How... historically, have we always funded up until the five special sessions? I remember that nightmare. up until then, had they always historically been funded through the community college fund?
Mr. Bender might want to answer that. I can remember from my years here that there was a period of time in which we eliminated support for the skill centers, but I can remember at times in the end of sessions when we did have Christmas trees at the end of sessions, when particularly the Sabin Center in Clackamas County all seemed to end up at least being considered as part of that package. So Mr. Bender may want to...
I'm sorry, I don't have the entire history with me, but it was for several sessions that I was aware of that there was funding in the community college bill for these programs. I don't know when it started. I don't know if there's anyone in the room who does.
The commissioner may be probably our best source of information right at this particular point. Please identify yourself for the record, although we all know you.
For the record, Cam Troy Sprawley, Commissioner of Community Colleges. It actually was started as a with six skill centers in 1993, and it was funded with lottery money. A follow-on session, it was funded out of a workers' compensation fund at DCBS that was found to be that was not a proper use of that fund. It came back in 97 and was funded in the Community College Support Fund as a earmark or as a separate line item. In 2001, Governor Kitzhaber took almost all of the line items. We'd grown to about 12 different kinds of special projects out, and that's when he rolled $45 million into the Community College Support Fund and said, if these are important activities at a community college, then you will find the money inside your operating budget to fund them. So then it did include the Sabin Skills Center. And we did, from 2001 to 2002, provided a transition plan where we partially funded each of the skills centers, including the Sabin Skills Center and the University Center that was then in Central Oregon and Southwestern, to give them a slide, if you will, so they weren't immediately cut off from their funding. So that's the history of these special earmarks.
But I ask a follow-up question,
yes.
And I appreciate the history. I'm a history buff, as you know. But are there still six skill centers? Did any of them go away as a result of having the state support cut?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, yes, I believe that with the loss of $50 million out of the Community College Support Fund, many of them have, I wouldn't say lost their skill center, it's just become part of the internal fabric of the college. Mm-hmm. I think President Preston Pulliams would tell you that they have been able to maintain a more identifiable skill center than some of the other colleges, but my latest information is that most of them have been rolled in and become part of the quite honestly at somewhat diminished level of capacity because of the resources.
But for these two that remain separate.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. That answers my questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. About the note on that.
Okay. And also I did want to mention that the Senate budget does support the issuance of Article 11G bonds for community college capital construction projects, and that authority will be approved, or assuming you approve the Senate budget plan as it stands now, that you would approve this authority after review in a capital construction bill. So we are recommending then an increase in the general fund appropriation of the Community College Support Fund in total by $36.9 million. And we also are recommending an adoption of a budget note, which is identical to a budget note in the House plan. As you know, the budget note process is a joint process this session. And that budget note reads, the subcommittee expects that community colleges will contain tuition rate increases as much as practicable in the 2005-07 biennium, and that the approved Community College Support Fund appropriation will minimize the need for colleges to increase tuition rates to maintain program offerings.
Great.
That seems to be, Mr. Chair, a contradictory statement. Could you say that again? I'm reading it too.
Sure. It's supposed to be, it expresses an understanding that community colleges will try to contain their tuition rate increases. Note that community college tuition rates, unlike OUS rates, where you've had a lot of discussions of what the tuition rate increases would be, and you provided the specific direction for community colleges, each of the individual district boards adopt the community college tuition rates. So this budget note, rather than stating what tuition rate increases should be, just states an expectation that the community colleges will contain their tuition rate increases as much as practicable in the 2005-07 biennium. So there's not an expectation of a tuition freeze.
It leaves that judgment to them.
It does leave that judgment to them. And it's also that the approved appropriation will minimize the need for colleges to increase tuition rates to maintain program offerings. Colleges also are expected to try to restore program offerings because, as you may recall from the Phase 1 and Phase 2 testimony, in the recent reductions in appropriation levels, they've restricted their programs quite a bit. So the restoration of program offerings and may require some tuition increases in order to help move that along, too.
Number eight.
Package number eight also is, this will be something that will be different from the bill that the House approved, although this was more a question of timing as opposed to any rejection of this particular recommendation by the House. LFO did not recommend this recommendation at all when the budget was before the House subcommittee because this reflects things that have happened since then. What has happened since then is the department has applied to the U.S. Department of Labor for federal grant monies to allow them to continue two programs that they are currently operating through the remainder of the 05-07 biennium. Last interim, the Emergency Board approved application for federal grants for Workforce Investment Act incentive grant funds and for Disability Navigator grant funds. These were two separate grants that the Emergency Board approved application for. The department subsequently applied for these grants and was awarded funds, which have allowed it to improve its innovation in the development of workforce services and also to improve services to workers with disabilities, workforce services to clients with disabilities. These funds under the federal grants that were approved earlier will expire in the middle of the 05-07 biennium. Now the department is applying for additional grant funds to extend these two programs through the remainder of the 05-07 biennium. LFO recommends that you increase the federal funds expenditure limitation by $1,176,088, which is what these grants would provide if they're both awarded, and extend two limited duration positions through the remainder of the biennium, which is an increase of 0.96 FTE, with the understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule the expenditure limitation increase and additional FTE authorization pending award of the federal grants. So we are recommending that so that they can go ahead and spend the money if the grant awards are approved.
For the sake of clarification, Mr. Bender, while you cannot obviously speak for the chair of the House Committee or the chair of the House Subcommittee, the reason they did not act on this is the reason you've given, that they did not have the information at that time. This is a relatively routine item.
It is relatively routine, and as part of the process for federal grant applications, there's also another process that the co-chairs are working jointly this session, and the House co-chair, who is also obviously the chair of this House Budget Committee, did approve this.
Yeah.
So even though they haven't voted on it yet, this would be consistent with the House budget, too. And the chair of the Education and Natural Resources Subcommittee also approved this particular item.
We'll take a motion on the first plot, 1 through 5, and then 7 and 8. Since we didn't approve 6. And then we'll go to discussion. Is there a motion to approve those recommendations? 1 through 5 plus the budget notes and 7 and 8.
Mr. Chair, I move LFO recommendations 1 through 5, 7 through 8, and the budget notes, including the budget notes.
Discussion of the motion. Yes.
Mr. Chair, I generally support this only with the exception of item number 7, which just is not sufficient. And I really view these community colleges as the most functional, if not the only truly functional part of our education system, and to starve them for funds makes no sense to me. So I will reluctantly not support the budget solely for that reason. It's not enough money.
Any additional comments?
I will not support the motion either. You know, there's a lot of things in here I like. But one, I'd like to not do it piecemeal. And then, I have my continuing objection that characterizing attorney fees from we're reducing attorney fees, actually the budget is increasing that from last session. Even though it's only $794, it's just my ongoing objection.
Probably doesn't surprise anybody that I will be supporting the motion. but I would like to point out one item. There's an approximately about a $9 million difference now between the House and Senate versions. There are some other differences in how that is approached. Actually, I could say that there's actually one of the other things is I believe the House version has a larger cut actually to an administrative. Or did they change? They dropped it back.
You dropped it back, so they're identical.
They're identical. Yeah. Or we were at. Okay. Okay. We dropped it back, so now they're identical. So many of these budgets, it's getting all blurry. But the other thing to keep in mind is that now we have reserved $6.5 million more than our corresponding committees have on the House side for opportunity grants. Within another budget in terms of revenue. We're getting at a point where budgets, that it's a zero-sum game, that additions to some budgets mean reductions to other budgets. At this particular point, I only have a couple of budgets left to go through this committee for their first go-around. That's the Oregon Student Assistance Commission budget and the OHSU budget. Those budgets are getting pretty solidified right now. So any adjustments in these budgets are probably, whatever the agreement is on the Oregon Health Sciences University is not probably going to be modified. So in this particular case, any modification between these budgets are probably going to be a modification between community college numbers and opportunity grant numbers. Just want to put that on the record. So could you please call the roll on the motion? The motion is to approve recommendations 1 through 5, recommendations 7 and 8 in the budget notes.
Aye.
No.
Senator
Walker?
Aye.
Senator Whitsett?
No.
Aye. Motion passes. We will now go on to the performance measures. Can you give a brief overview and contain the standard language in terms of the...
Exactly. As you can see, attached are a list of performance measures that we are recommending that you approve for the department. These are these were discussed in many cases in committee, and also some of them were requested by the co-chairs that these be added to the performance measure list. You'll see that some of these are continued, some of them are added, and some of them are developed. For those performance measures that we are noted as added, we recommend that you require the department to submit targets for those added performance measures to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee for approval no later than August 1st, 2006. And for those performance measures that are labeled develop, we recommend that you require direct the agency to submit particular performance measures for approval by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee no later than August 1st, 2006. So in other words, JLAC would be approving measures that are identified as developed here and approving targets for measures that are identified as added here during the upcoming interim. If there are any questions about particular performance measures, I'd be happy to address those for you. These are, again, these are the ones that the House Committee did adopt these.
Any questions about the performance measures at this time?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Not a question about these performance measures, which I certainly accept. Just an observation that in our various budget committees, as we have been doing the work around development of performance measures, we're sending a lot of work to the Joint Legislative and Audit Committee, and I just hope that legislative leadership, both houses, I hope we're tracking what that workload is shaping, how that workload is shaping up, and that we are realistic in the expectations that we have about work that can be accomplished there. And I believe that we're also going to be looking at modification of timelines for some of these reports. Again, just an observation for the good of the order.
Senator Gourley, I concur with your comments. We both sit on the same subcommittees, and we've seen a lot of these, actually. Any additional comments on the performance measures? Is there a motion to approve the performance measures as presented?
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of performance measures for the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development.
It's been a move to approve the performance measures. Are there any objections to the performance measures? None. Motion passes. Is there a motion to recommend Senate Bill 5617 as amended to the full committee?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Discussion.
Is that with a due pass recommendation?
That's with a due pass recommendation. That's, I think I heard you say that.
Yes, I just have.
Yes, Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, when I went through all these budgets, I basically have picked out things out of the governor's original budget that I like, the things out of the House budget I like, the things out of the Senate budget I like. Surprisingly, note, except for the K through 12 budget, the budgets that I truly support are the budgets actually the higher number. So this hydraulic that we have between K through 12 and these other budgets, to me, is still the crucial thing. And I just feel like there's more good to become out of, putting, say, an extra $9 million into community college rather than the K through 12. So that's going to be my basic position throughout this thing. And so I will be an overlord on this particular budget.
Any additional comments?
Mr. Chair, I would just echo what Senator Nelson said. I realize that we don't have a superabundance of funds and we have to prioritize where we spend them. But I think that, in my mind, the community colleges is a priority and we need to put the money there.
Mr. Chair, again, just a comment for the record. My colleagues, especially my colleague to my left, is correct about the inadequacy of the budget before us. All of the budgets, most of the budgets that we're passing through this legislature, whether it's education, human services, public safety, I could go on and on about holes in budgets in public safety where I've spent a lot of time this session, but the budgets are inadequate based on inadequate revenues, again based on an inadequate revenue gathering system. And until we get to tax reform, tax restructuring, we're going to be in this place of inadequacy, which is also a place leading to mediocrity, which is unacceptable, and I've said that many times before in this committee. When I think about what we're expecting from community colleges, which is where workforce development happens, we were talking about the skills center, the skills centers earlier. And whatever the remaining number, we need those skill centers to be doing the work of retraining our workforces around the state. It's the best investment that we have in economic and community development. And again, we're just not where we need to be in making the kind of investment that I think, and many of us, all of us, know that we should be making in community colleges. So again, I just want to say that for the record, because, again, we're coming from a place of inadequacy, and I think that we happen to be better than that.
Thank you. One of the things that, in looking at these budgets, that I tend to not agree in terms of always looking at the K through 12 budget as a way to balance other budgets. It's a relatively large number, and I think that's one of the things that makes it a relatively large target. I quite honestly don't believe it would be as easy to take numbers away from the K through 12 budget if we were actually here approving 198 individual school district budgets and saw what the impacts of those cuts were at the local level. I've already on record on the floor of saying that whether a number ends up being 5.220 or 5.270 for the state school fund, it will be inadequate. To be fair, I will tell you that I think every budget that comes out of this committee and most of the budgets that come out of every other subcommittee that is general fund or lottery fund based will be inadequate in terms of meeting the needs. There's nothing to write mother home about, even if I had a mother at home, she's now deceased, about the community college budget.
She's watching, though.
About the community college budget. She probably is. Or the higher ed budget, or the Department of Education budget. And in Senator Gordley's committee, there's certainly nothing in terms of the OYA budget or the state police mm-hmm. budget in particular. The only budget actually in this committee where we will actually do something better than we've done them in the past is probably in the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. And we can probably only say we've done better because we've done so little in the past. That's why we're doing better. But with that, Senator Walker, do you want to close out the finalists?
Yeah, I think I'll do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I agree with all the comments today. I mean, they're thoughtful. We're all here trying to do our job. And I particularly wanted to comment on what Senator Gordley had to say about the skill centers. And that's why I asked for the historical perspective on that, because they are valuable. My committee and the policy committee was education and workforce. And they're really, really important to that. If we want people to be trained, get better jobs, family wage jobs, we need to really have them trained in skills. And we had a number of students come in from the Save and Skills Center and testify on my committee about how wonderful the program is for them. So it needs to be funded at a level that can sustain itself and actually do what it needs to do. And the testimony you heard today is that these six centers now have been basically absorbed, other than these two, within the community colleges that they serve, and they are at diminished capacity. So I think the more we can do, the better. These two programs are shining stars right now, and I'd like to keep them going. And eventually, when we get this whole structure of the tax system in Oregon figured out and how to harvest trees and sell our water like Senator Nelson wants to do, I think we'll be able to get all of the things that we need. But for now, I think we've done a pretty good job.
Corrected. I think Senator Nelson wants to be able to use our water for economically beneficial purposes. He doesn't want to sell it to particularly California if they have it.
Well, schools, I mean, give me 5% of the water out of the Columbia River and I'll solve all your problems.
Yeah.
Well, with that.
Well, we'll get a tsunami soon and you can have
I can take care of it. Do that? Okay.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor to approve SB 5617. As amended with a due pass recommendation to the Senate committee. Will you call the roll?
Senator Gordley?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Whitfield? Aye. Motion passes, and I will carry to the full and carry to the floor. Committee, I'm going to do something very dangerous here because I need to confer with Mr. Bender. I am going to actually recess the committee for about 3 minutes. And so we will
don't go anywhere.
Don't go anywhere, and we will start again in about 3 minutes. So we are recessed now. For the Senate Special Committee on Budget. And I will open a work session on SB 300. Mr. Bender?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I distributed a packet of materials to you on Senate Bill 300. It's the packet that has this buff-colored sheet on the top. And in this packet, there is a very short descriptor of the Senate bill on top. Then there's a copy of our fiscal impact. And then there's a copy of the staff measure summary. That was not our staff measure summary, but the staff measure summary of the Senate Committee on Education and Workforce, which did pass this bill and referred it on to you for your consideration. I'd like to explain briefly what Senate Bill 300A does. Senate Bill 300A creates the Expanded Options Program beginning in the 2006-07 school year. And what this program does is it allows high school juniors and seniors or others who are eligible to attend an Oregon public high school and are 16 years of age or older. We're primarily talking about people who have dropped out of high school, so they're not juniors and seniors. But it allows these individuals to obtain dual high school and college credit if they enroll in an eligible community college or Oregon University System course. Now, if they do that, they'll be able to get dual credit. The Expanded Option Program also, though, requires that the school districts pay the students' tuition fees and other instructional costs required for the qualified post-secondary coursework, and it exempts students from liability for these costs. So the students will not have to pay to take the courses at either the community college or the Oregon University System. The courses that are eligible include post-secondary academic and professional technical courses, as well as distance education classes. The bill specifically allows the post-secondary institutions to retain their admission and enrollment standards for participating students. That is to say, they're not required to admit students under expanded options in an open enrollment process. And it limits, the post-secondary institutions are able to limit programs accepting students under the program. That's to say, they may limit the types of courses that they will accept students in through expanded options. The bill excludes post-secondary courses that are identical to the scope of another course offered by the student's high school. So if there's a high school class, the course that's available, the student does not have the option in that case to take an identical course at a community college or Oregon University System school. It does allow high schools to cap participation in the program at 330 quarter hours per 1,000 students. What this is, in terms of enrollment, this is equivalent to approximately 7 full-time students participating per 1,000 enrolled. The cap is on a high school by high school basis, and the school districts do not have to impose the cap. It is optional. So this is an optional cap. It is not a strict cap on enrollment of students in the early expanded options program. The bill also directs schools to give priority for program participation to at-risk students in certain instances, primarily in cases where the cap that we've just mentioned is excluding certain students from participation. The bill directs that the schools give priority to at-risk students to participate in those cases. Another item in the bill requires that school districts spend for each student in the program a minimum of 50% of the school district's general purpose grant per extended weighted ADM, average daily membership. What that number will be is not known. Of course, there is still the amount of the state school fund appropriation is still undetermined at this point. But the range that we're talking about when you look at the Senate and the House budgets, roughly, approximately, the budgets would yield about $5,500 in a general purpose grant per extended ADMW. So the 50% expenditure would be approximately $2,750 per student. Please note, though, that the bill, that the costs, that this restriction applies for each student in the program. So a student that is only taking, say, one course at a community college through expanded options program, would the school district in that case would be required to spend $2,750, though the cost of attending a community taking a community college course is far less than that. Basically, community college credit rates are now roughly $60 per hour. They vary. So the course, if you're taking a three-credit course at a community college with the additional fees, et cetera, you're looking at a range of approximately $200 or so.
I would say relative to that particular item in discussions, I believe some of the parties that have worked with Senator Gordley, it might be good for them to come forward because I believe they can give an explanation for that, why they agreed upon that number. So if Mr. Bennett and Mr. Harvey will come forward.
While they're coming forward, Mr. Chair, if I may frame the measure before us. Let me say, first of all, I'm just so very pleased that the measure is finally before us. But frankly, I'll be even more pleased once the measure becomes law. The bill comes to us out of a collaboration with my office and the association, Associated Oregon Industries. That's where the collaboration began, and that goes back to the about a decade of work to get here. The business community, along with many others, education committee, many other partners, have noted the absence of policy in public education that directs when certain high school students are ready to take a course or courses at a community college or university, that they should be able to attend and that the class fees, course materials should be paid by that student's high school. And the problem, and it's kind of a good kind of problem, is that Oregon, while we have programs like this available in different places around the state, access and opportunity do not exist as a system approach. Intentionally aligning high school to community college and to university opportunities, and again for all students who might choose this path, no matter where they live in Oregon. And so what has been needed is a public policy statement that places the student consumer of public education at the center and makes it possible for students to move on when they are ready. And this policy is about increasing academic and career opportunities for all public school students, expanding options, if you will. And I'm really grateful to, extremely grateful to Harvey Matthews from Associated Oregon Industries and Chuck Bennett from the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators for being willing to take on the role of co-convening a work group that looked at how we could come to some consensus on a bill that could make its way through this legislative process. I'm just deeply grateful to these two gentlemen for their leadership, but also to all of the other partners who participated in the work group. Oregon School Boards Association, Oregon Education Association, Oregon University System, community colleges, and a whole host of others, and I regret that I don't have a list of names in front of me to cite them all. But again, this measure is about putting students at the center and addressing the needs of students when students are ready to move on, and students will be the beneficiaries of the good work of those folks who participated in the work group.
Mr. Chairman, regarding your...
Please identify yourself.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Chuck Bennett from the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. First, thank you, Senator Gordley, for your kind comments to all those folks who participated in the work group to make this happen. I think we all came to the conclusion after several sessions this is a really important piece of legislation for students and their educational advancement and opportunities. Specifically, Mr. Chairman, to the question you asked based on LFO's question regarding the use of the ADMW and the half of it made available for students participating in this. This was a work group. This was an opportunity for us to look at a whole batch of different needs of various institutions that would be associated with this kind of program. And we found in the end that the kind of flexibility that would be afforded under this particular model worked best for students. It worked best, particularly when you couple it with the caps on participation, worked best for the school districts. We had a number of issues. You know, you have a number of moving parts going on when you go through a bill like this. And we found that this model just appeared to work the best for students, where you could have students that would take full course loads, students that would take less than full course loads. But when coupled with the caps in participation, we found that this, we thought, would work extremely well. Understanding that also with the caps, I think in some ways you have to look at Senate Bill 300 as a kind of model program and a model opportunity to see how this is all going to work. And we wanted to make sure the funding was adequate to get a very clear picture of how this will work. We think this will expand in the future. We think this is just the start of a really expanded extended options program. And so that, I think, would hit at it. It also does not preclude and certainly encourages in the bill individual agreements between school districts and community colleges as those may be developed as well. So it has a whole bunch of different ways, but this one appeared to us to be the best funding system we could see for everybody.
Mr. Harvey.
Chairman Devlin, Harvey Matthews from Associated Oregon Industries. I would echo what Chuck said and say that, you know, we had several ideas on the table. This work group product is based on about 13 hours of heavy lifting. This is the idea that got everybody on board because it basically allows school districts to pool that 50% of ADMW and then use it for anything from a student with one community college credit to a student that gets accepted for a full-time experience at a university in Oregon. So we were trying to develop a program that would encompass that range, and everybody felt like this was the best possible option.
I would want to state that, for the record, that I've been contacted about this bill by almost all the participants that Senator Gordley has identified.
And their mothers.
And particularly OEA, COSA, OSBA. I've not been contacted directly by community colleges or the OUS or the Chancellor's office. But since they have been relatively vocal in their displeasure in other areas at times, I'm sure if they had a problem, they would be contacting me. And no one has expressed anything but support for the bill in its current. I understand Mr. Bender's concern, and I understand that this was an agreed-upon number between the parties, because I also understand that, well, Senator Gordley has worked on this for a number of sessions. This is the first time that all of the parties have come to agreement. I won't comment on your many years here in the legislature.
I also want to say how much I appreciate Senator Walker for her leadership and understanding as the bill came forward to her committee, the Education and Workforce Committee, that this was a policy that needed to be in place. and understanding that this is a policy, again, focused on putting student needs at the center. And again, her charge to the work group was along the lines of get to consensus, come back with a product. But again, this could not have happened without your encouragement and support, and I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Gordley, because this bill, when it got introduced, there were people who didn't like it and were immediately wanting it to go away, and I said, no, I don't think so. You know, Senator Gordley's worked on this for a long time. I really think this is good policy if we can get there. And the rhetoric changed so much. We had a hearing. I was going through my bill file on February 16th. Lori Wimmer Whalen testified, and she didn't like the bill on that day at all. And then this work group, and neither did some of the others, the community colleges were concerned at that time that this program may displace some adult students. Community colleges only get more dollars if they grow faster than the rest of the community colleges in the state. The U of O, however, was enthusiastic about the goal of the bill and its emphasis on broad access. So then we zoom forward to April 6th, and this is after the committee's had, the work group has had five meetings, and Mr. Matthews represented that was 13 hours. They kept me abreast of all their meetings, and I have all their emails in my file. But here we are at April 6th. Lori Wimmer Whalen states on the record, in my 15 years here, we haven't had such a successful work group. So my notes don't lie. They say what they say. And these people were very serious about coming to the table and resolving this. The House is quite enthusiastic about this bill, Mr. Chair, because Representative Dahlem introduced House Bill 2919, which is an exact duplicate. So they are ready to go, and he also said, we will nurture and defend this bill. So I am so enthusiastic. And then I belong to the Education Commission of the state. So I was appointed to that organization and just recently received the Progress of Education Reform 2004 issue on dual enrollment. And it identifies in here that 36 states have adopted dual enrollment policies, and they all take a variety of approaches and go through that. This is a great piece of work, and I believe Mr. Bennett is correct. This is just the start, and I think as we move forward, we can expand on that. But if you bite off too much at first, the program will go under, and we don't want this program to go under. There was some testimony in the policy committee from a couple of parents of TAG children, talented and gifted children, who didn't think the bill went far enough, but I encourage them to come back next session to nurture this along if we need to do some more things. But, you know, kudos to everyone on this work group and to Senator Gordley for sticking with it for 10 years. My record so far is it took me 3 sessions to get a bill passed, and that was this session on a very simple bill, but it happens, and I appreciate her dedication. And Mr. Chair, this is a darn good bill, and I'm grateful that you're hearing it today.
Apologize for the problem on your name, Mr. Matthews, but
that's all right, Mr. Richard. It's not.
Mr. Chair, there is one other acknowledgement I need to make, and that is for Sean Cruz, my legislative aide, who also attended all of those work group meetings on my behalf, and I know he made a wonderful contribution in that effort. And I also want to acknowledge Sean because he's in Louisiana today visiting with his son Tyler, who will be departing in a couple of days for Iraq, second tour of duty. So, again, just want to make that announcement.
Well, thank you, Paul. And, Senator Gordon, I give you the honor of making the motion.
I think Senator Whitsitt had a question.
Yes, Senator Whitsitt.
The only question I had, I wondered if this program is homeschool eligible.
You want me to give a short answer, and then I can get you a longer answer later? Probably not, because some schools don't receive credits in terms of ABMW or payment or payments from the state. If you want to answer, if you want to try, Mr. Bennett,
Try me too. Mr. Chairman, Chuck Bennett, Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. We went over that at some length. Homeschool students are eligible. They would need to enroll in their public school to get to the program. There's no way, it'd be just a straightforward way to do it, much like other programs that we offer for homeschool students.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Now, Senator Bogart.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 300A to the Senate Special Committee on Budget with a due pass recommendation.
It's been moved to move Senate Bill 300A to the Senate Special Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation. I'll call the roll, Mr. Chair. Please call the roll.
Senator
Moore.
Aye.
Senator Nelson.
Aye.
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 Chair Devlin. Aye. Motion passes. And with this, if she doesn't object, Senator Gordley carries to the poll and carries to the floor.
Happy to. Thank you.
We will move on now to our last item. And could we have, can we call Ms. Hunt in case we need her? I will close the work session on 300A. Open a work session on SB 1050. The original bill doesn't have any real content. So. Okay. Mr. Bender, do you want to give an explanation of the bill?
Yes. Mr. Chair, we've distributed to you the SB 1053-3 amendments. These do replace entirely the contents of the bill with the language that you see before you. And what these amendments do is they require each school district board to adopt an ending balance policy. The policy may be either to that the ending balance has a target as of a particular percentage, or it may be a range of percentages. So, in other words, the percentage that the school district's general fund may carry over as an ending balance. Each district must establish a policy and set either a percentage or a range. If the school district shall submit an explanation to the Department of Education, if it turns out that the amount the school district does carry over as an ending balance is off by more than 10%. So in other words, if the school district has set a target as an ending balance, if the actual ending balance is 110% or more, or 90% or less than what the target was, there is a requirement. Or if the school district has set a range, for example, 5 to 8% or something like that, then if the actual ending balance is 10% more over what the balance would be at the top of that range, or 10% under what the balance would be at the lower end of that range, then the department, again, is required to report this and submit an explanation to the Department of Education, the district, I'm sorry, shall submit an explanation to the Department of Education for why this has occurred, and they shall post on the website the budgets of all school districts and any explanatory statements received under this section because an ending balance was outside of the range that had been established by the school district board.
Are there any questions for Mr. Bender? We brought Ms. Hunt down here in case any of the committee members had any questions. Okay. At this particular juncture, I have extrasensory perception, but I think I might have to wait for Senator Walker to return.
I call for the vote. Is that possible? Is there a procedure?
Well.
Chair Devlin, while we're waiting, on the one hand, under 3A, we have a plus or minus 10%. Under 3B, we could have a plus or minus 30%, depending on what that range would be. Is that correct?
That is correct.
That is correct, actually. Because the bill also allows or that a school district may set a range rather than an exact level.
So in essence, all this is doing is saying that the school district must set a policy and then abide by the policy, because if you set up a range of that broad, the plus or minus, you can set up anything you like.
You could theoretically. I think the purpose of the bill is to just provide some more transparency. I mean, obviously, I think if the bill had been in place, what you would have seen in some of these policies for the, particularly the 2003-2004 year, would have been the things we talked about yesterday. We did not know what the PERS rate would be. We did not know whether Measure 30 would pass or fail and what the impact would be. We did not really know how long the recession was going to last and what the future level of education funding was going to be. So that's why we have set the ending fund balance at this level. Given the original bill, that I don't think too many people have seen the original bill, which is relatively short. The original bill was to set a specific percentage, which I don't think would have been a particularly good idea. Some of the earlier drafts of amendments to the bill actually would have wanted school districts to report whenever an individual line item was more than 10% different from what the line item was. And the chair explained to parties that school districts might have several hundred line items within a budget, and some of them might be relatively small. So, but I think the intent of the bill now is just some transparency. There's been some public interest in the reserve levels that school districts have. This will be probably just a way for them to communicate more clearly what their reserve fund policies are. That's basically what the bill will do. Is there a motion to adopt the Dash 3 amendments?
So moved.
Okay, the Dash 3 amendments have been moved. Is there any discussion of the motion?
I'm just going to vote no. Just on the same thing. This is another report. One more thing for the school districts to do. I think it takes away from their resources. It's confusing to me. So okay. I'm just doing it on a gut basis. I just don't think this is necessary. So I'm going to be voting.
Finally, Senator Nelson and I disagree on something.
Well, see, there was an issue to Senator Walker.
Okay. Anything additional, Senator Whitson? Okay. Yeah. Will you call the roll?
Senator Dorsey?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Whitson?
Aye.
Senator Evelyn?
Aye. Motion passes. Is there a motion to recommend Senate Bill 1053 to the Senate Special Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay. It's been moved as amended. That included as amended.
Okay.
Is there any discussion? Will you please call the roll?
Senator Gordley?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Whitson?
Aye.
Chair Devlin?
Aye. Motion passes. Senator Gordley, are you still okay with carrying this to the full and to the floor?
I am.
Okay. Senator Gordley will carry to the full and the floor. Committee, I do not know for sure what we will be doing next Monday. As soon as I know, I will let you know.
Monday, yeah.
And so with that, although I should put you on notice, that our normally regular scheduled meeting is not until next Monday. But everybody understands that we're now under 1 hour notice. And if the chair of the Senate committee directs me to hold a meeting, it could be before Monday, so with that. And I wanted to apologize to Ms. Hunt for bringing her all the way down here, but I thought that there might be some questions. So, but with that.
Mr. Chair, just a little clarification on that 1 hour notice. We're not meeting this weekend, are we?
The Senate president has announced that we will not be meeting on Saturday or Sunday.
Their session, but I just want
he
to
was
sure.
Not clear about budget committee.
That's
members.
Why
in
I'm
his
asking.
Announcement, and I will try to get that clarification.
Thank you.
Okay, and with that, we are adjourned.